And now, transcribed, Dr. Paul, radio's great story of moral conflict. Brought to you today by NBC. Say, I have a little story to tell you. A story of two pretty girls who went Christmas shopping one cold, bright, snowy afternoon. Oh, it was a grand and glorious feeling. They had plenty of money and lots of presents to buy. They went into store after store on the main street and bought all sorts of presents that they were going to give on Christmas morning. About 6 hours later, both girls had presents piled high up in their arms. In fact, they had so many presents piled so high that they couldn't see where they were walking. Suddenly, there was a screeching cry, and one of the girls went sprawling on all fours, presents scattering in all directions. Amusing? Yes, it might have been if it were a comedy program. The girl who fell hadn't seen the fire plug in front of her. And right near the fire plug, there was a big hole in the sidewalk where some excavation was going on. Another couple inches, and the accident might have been more serious. As it turned out, the only thing hurt was the girl's dignity. Now, the moral of this twice-told tale is, be sure to buy only as many presents at one time as you can carry safely. Don't try to save time by getting them all at once, piling them up in your arms and blocking your view of the street or road. Remember, a motorist may have as much trouble seeing you as you will have seeing him. Be sure you can see where you're going any time you're near traffic. Now, our story continues. Dr. Paul has just arrived at his mother's house, where Virginia Martin and the famous Carlotta Mayfield have been waiting for him. Why has the actress driven down to Greenfield? Why is it necessary for her to see Dr. Paul and Virginia? Why the mystery about Miss Mayfield's actions? These are questions that are as bewildering to Dr. Paul as to Virginia. Carlotta's remark that when she was a young girl in San Francisco, she had met Virginia's foster mother, Ellen Logan, has suggested nothing in the way of a solution, so far as Virginia is concerned. The doorbell rings. Dr. Paul goes to answer it. Carlotta knows it will be Raymond Voorhees, who has received specific instructions as to the part he's to play in this afternoon's conversation. Now, as Dr. Paul returns to the living room with Mr. Voorhees, Carlotta feigns surprise.
Raymond, what are you doing here?
I changed my mind. Don't you think I should be here, Carlotta? After all, I am your manager.
Mrs. Martin, you've met Raymond Voorhees.
Yes.
And Dr. Bopp, Mr. Voorhees.
We introduced ourselves to each other at the front door.
Yes. Won't you sit down, Mr. Voorhees?
Thank you.
But, Raymond, I wish you wouldn't. Very well. As I started to tell you, Mrs. Martin, I met Ellen Logan when I was just about 15. Your foster father was extremely ill. They couldn't afford a nurse. Ellen had run an ad in the newspaper, an ad for cheap but willing help. Oh, that was I, all right. I went to work for Ellen Logan.
At 15, Miss Mayfield?
Oh, yes. Yes, I looked several years older. As a matter of fact, I lied to Ellen about my age. I was strong as a horse and certainly willing to work. As a matter of fact, I was desperate. I needed a place to hide.
To hide?
I'd run away from home.
Won't you please tell me, Miss Mayfield, what the connection is with me?
I'm coming to that. After several months, I left Ellen Logan and got a job in a nightclub. The term nightclub is a little grand for that place. It wasn't prepossessing, but it was a job, and at least I was entertaining. My stint at that particular bistro was relatively short and culminated in a runaway marriage, which also was relatively short. After a few miserable months, I returned to Ellen Logan's. Quite desperate, unhappy, and still very young for all my worldly experience. I wasn't quite 17. And so, Mrs. Martin...
What's the matter, Miss Mayfield?
I'm sorry. It's just that it's so difficult for me. And I'm frightened.
Frightened? Of what?
Of the two of you.
What?
Mrs. Martin, a moment ago you said the name Carla Maria Menotti meant nothing to you. But you'd never heard of it.
No.
Well, then you've never seen your birth certificate.
My...
Carlotta, stop. In the name of heaven, stop. Don't make this mistake.
Mistake?
I know what I'm doing, Raymond. Mistake or not, it's something that has to be done. It's too late anyway to change my mind.
No, it might not be. There's a long-distance call I could make.
No.
What's he talking about, Miss Mayfield?
He's worried about what I'm telling you. Worried for my sake, because I'm about to throw away a fortune.
A fortune?
Just a minute. You told me before Paul arrived, you told me that Carla Menotti had been your name.
Yes. You're beginning to understand.
Then you asked me about my birth certificate.
Doesn't that make it obvious, then, that what I have to tell you is that I'm your mother?
Oh, Carlotta.
Mother? Oh, but that's impossible.
Why? Didn't I tell you I was 16 when I was married? I was only with my husband for a few months. Then I returned to Ellen Logan's to have my baby. Oh, Virginia, please don't go.
Well, where are you going to?
I think I'd like to be by myself for a little while.
Oh, no, wait, darling, wait. Here, sit down here beside me. I think we'd better hear the rest of this.
But Mother... Mother always said that my real parents were dead. When I was little, I used to ask her about them. She was always vague. She said the birth certificate had been lost, that they were Italian fisher people. She was always so vague. And then, after a while, I didn't ask anymore. Is this true?
Yes, it is. There's proof. Ellen Logan has the proof.
You were 16 years old. You didn't want a child, did you?
Not in the sense that a more mature, happily married woman might wish for one. But that isn't why I left you with the Logans. I was in love with your father. But he was only a little older than I. A very young, rich man from an important San Francisco family. At least one day he would be rich. I'll admit I did think it would be glamorous to be his wife. But I loved him. Only I couldn't compete with his mother. He was the focal point of her life. She was a strong, domineering woman. She didn't like me because Sonny Boy had done something without asking her advice. And because I was intelligent. I think she resented that more than that I came from the wrong side of the tracks. In a few weeks, she'd created a rift between us that became a chasm. Her son, seeing me through Mama's eyes, began to be disgusted of what she called his shoddy escapade. I left that place and went to the only friend I had, Ellen Logan. She took me in. And then Mama handled the business of the divorce. All very hush-hush, you understand. She came to me with a proposition. She'd set up a trust for me, a nice fat one, giving me a large annual income. That trust would continue so long as I didn't reveal that I had ever been married to her boy. Oh, please believe me if you can. At that time, I didn't think that I was selling out my child, selling your heritage. My baby was hardly real to me then. I was consumed with bitterness against those people. There'd been nothing in my background, no real spiritual training, no teaching on which I could draw on which I could depend for guidance. So I held on to my ambition, my goal. And I thought, all right, I'll take them for whatever I can. The agreement was made. I never saw either of them again. Then, after you were born, I agreed to let the Logans keep you. They didn't think they could have a child, and they wanted one so desperately, and... Well, everything considered, I thought it would be best for you. They were good people. I thought they could give you a better life than I could. Also, I agreed not to interfere. I left. When I received my first payment from the trust, I bought an apartment building for the Logans.
So that's how they got it. I often wondered how they ever managed.
They let me do it for your sake. Oh, they were proud. They wanted you to be theirs. They didn't want any help from me. Years later, as I grew older and wiser, I knew I'd made a mistake. But it was too late then. I believed you to be perfectly secure and happy. But oh, what regrets I've had. But I didn't dare. I just didn't dare.
Miss Mayfield, is my father dead?
No.
Are you going to tell me who he is?
I'll have to. He's Ross Lawrence Cooper.
What?
Yes, Dr. Bach. Ross Cooper. Would-be senator from California.
For a moment, no one could say anything. And Raymond Voorhees, a silent and bewildered witness, studied the three other people in the room and wondered, too, about Ross Cooper.
What's Carlotta trying to pull? What's the idea of trying to protect Ross Cooper, saying he didn't know she was going to have a child? She told me that was part of the terms of the trust, that she was to keep the marriage and the baby a secret. What's she trying to pull?
More about Dr. Paul in a moment. Say, most of us have been called away from home and loved ones at one time or another, and we know from the experience that there's nothing quite as important during those days of separation as mail, a good old letter from home. Any man or woman in the armed forces will tell you that the only call that takes precedence over mess is mail call. And when a letter is more important to a hungry GI than food, you know it means something. There's a truce in Korea, yes. But to our men and women in service, mail from home is just as important now as it ever was. In some respects, it's even more important. The action, the strain, the anxieties of war can keep a soldier's mind occupied. But when the letdown comes, the time to relax, that's when morale needs a shot in the arm. Now, your soldier knows the shooting is over. He's done his big job, and now he wants to get home. But unfortunately, there's still a lot to keep him for a while. So don't let him down. Help keep up his morale. Write that letter today. Listen tomorrow when Carlotta has more to say to bewildered Virginia Martin. This is Vincent Pelletier reminding you to be with us tomorrow, same time, same station. The story of Dr. Paul by Virginia Crosby is an NBC Radio Network production, transcribed under the supervision of George L. Fogle.